Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at betterleadersbetterschools.com/book. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This podcast is also a proud member of the Edu Podcast Network, podcast for educators, podcast by educators. You can listen to more great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. I created Better Leaders, Better Schools because I was fed up of not having deep conversations, vulnerable, authentic conversations about school leadership. And that's why you keep coming back week after week. You listen to this podcast as an investment in your own leadership development. If you would like to invest in the production of Better Leaders, Better Schools, I have really good news. It's extremely affordable. $1 or $2 a month will go very far and make a big impact. At $10 a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every 60 days. To become a patron, it's easy. Just click the link in the show notes, become a patron. Thank you for investing in yourself and thank you for investing in this podcast. Thank you for listening every week. Let's get this show started.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
Today's guest is Henry Vasquez, a four-time entrepreneur with experience in consumer media, B2B, and software consulting. Henry helped Sparts Media grow from a dorm room idea to a downtown office with more than 40 employees and 5 million users. He has built 2 7-figure startups, 2 venture-backed startups, and created over 100 software applications. In this episode, you'll learn, do you have a bench of talent? Why you should be world-class in one thing and broad in all the rest? And why you need to do what you say you'll do? And we're going to learn so much more about his app, Tribe.do. Check him out. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show. Well, I'm so excited to bring today to you Henry Vasquez, who is leading the charge with a startup called Tribe. And Henry, can you give us a little bit of the background information? Like, who are you and how did this whole business venture begin?
Absolutely. Great meeting with you this evening, Daniel. So Tribe actually started out of another company. I've been in the startup world since 2009. I've been fortunate enough to be on the early founding teams for 3 different startups. So I really know software pretty well. And my co-founder and I actually met through an organization here in Chicago called the Startup Institute, which is an alternative education program to help people who want to get into startups build basic skills and network. And so we were both instructors there, which is funny, you know, being kind of young, already teaching. But we met through the program and we found that we had a passion for enterprise productivity and solving problems of teams working together. Sam had built something that he was using to manage his own consulting practice. And he came to me and said, hey, I've got this tool I've been using and all of my clients really want it, but I haven't built it as a product. I use it as an internal tool. And I initially dismissed it and he kept on persisting. And eventually I saw what he had built, which was just a kind of a glimpse of where we eventually took the product. And I was really inspired. I said, you know, this is a very radically different take on organizational tools. And I think we can be the ones to, you know, bring a fresh new solution to this market. And so we actually worked together on a little project. And then he came to me and said, how'd you like to co-found a company and we'll build this together?
Wow.
You can be the CEO and I'll be the CTO. And so it was a tough choice. I had already had a business. I had built up to about 12 employees. And I was a partner there and had to figure out what to do with all that and took the leap. And so this was a year ago. We started in February 2015.
So what was that decision-making process like to, I guess, pivot and then join a new company with a future that you didn't know what was going to happen?
Yeah, life is full of surprises. And I think you, as an entrepreneur, you have to be opportunistic. You have to have your values and you have to have the things that really matter to you, but you also have to be constantly keeping an eye on great opportunities that come along. And Sam was one of the most talented people I've ever met. I saw a passion and intensity for product that I'd rarely seen. And I knew that we had complementary skill sets. So it was just a very kind of serendipitous coming together And it was a tough decision. You know, I went through kind of the valley of death in terms of the first, you know, getting a business off the ground. And I had done that twice. So you think I would have been sick of it? The first business we got started in college and built it from a dorm up to 40 employees. And we raised over $10 million. And that business is still thriving here in River North. And so I went through that experience. And then I went out and started another company and did it all over again. And got that one up, you know, to first million in revenue. And whew, a lot of long nights, a lot of sacrifices. But at the same time, I knew it was possible. I knew I could do it faster. I knew that there are some universal lessons in entrepreneurship that I could leverage and relationships. And I thought this was a new challenge. It was a harder business model, but I think I was ready for it. And I had so much confidence in my co-founder. I thought this actually makes a lot of sense.
Can you touch on a little bit of those universal lessons and what you've learned about, nurturing and leveraging relationships to help you be successful? I think principals and school leaders could definitely benefit from your insights here.
Yeah, so I like to think of it as, in startups at least, you have sort of a portfolio of your life. Not any one bet that you make is not going to determine the whole thing. If you step back and say, I got to learn from each experience, and I have to figure out what am I going to keep, even if a company doesn't work. And I started sort of building a list of what that might mean. So, for example, one of the things is your relationships, and that kind of it starts with having a great bench of talent and people that you know that you can trust that could be potential co-founders, people that could come work for you, and also service providers. So I found that just having a great network of people who have different skills that you can call upon. That's a huge life hack. I mean, that will accelerate the pace at which you can get things done. And so building a bench was really important. Building credibility and trust with sources of capital. So mostly angel investors and, you know, banks, people who will trust you with their money. That's a big one. I mean, they may not apply as much in the public sector, but there's probably a different version of that. And so, yeah, so you've got people, that's a big piece. And I think being very T-shaped, we talk a lot about this sort of in startups and sometimes in colleges, you want to be world-class in something and you want to be broad in a lot of other things. And so you bring to the table some unique strength that you have, but you also have this crazy breadth of experience. You've done a little bit of marketing, a little bit of sales, some governance, some hiring, some technology, being well-rounded in all these different areas, you know, the humanities, social sciences, and that just makes you an incredible leader. Now, you don't want to be so broad that you don't also have something, you know, that you've really dug into. And so that's why we call it T-shaped. I think it takes you a while to get to that point. I think I'm still figuring it out for myself, but that's something that has been noticeably different each time I start a business is having the well-rounded experience. I've been the designer for the team. I've been the marketer for the team. I've been the fundraiser in chief, the recruiter in chief, the sales guy. I've built products. It's great to be able to go in the beginning, having a generalist who can connect with people is so important. And I imagine in your industry that, you know, being able to understand a variety of different problems from personal experience allows you to connect and relate with people and build bridges and build alliances. So there's a parallel.
Gotcha there. And what would you say that you're world class? What's your key advantage?
Well, I've only been I'm pretty young guy, so it's hard to claim to be an expert in anything.
Claim it. I want you to claim it.
You know, I think one of the things that I do really well is build a brand. I've been doing that for a long time. I actually got my first job at a startup, the one I got in college, because I had built a brand. I'd built a community around an idea that was bigger than me. I think that's the area that I put in the most time, that I have the most experience. And what that's about is really being able to listen to a large number of people and anticipate the needs of a very large group of people and then create a way to package some kind of message that is bigger than one person, something that embodies someone's desire or, you know, it could be their frustration in some cases, and put that together into a message and a community and content and kind of wrap it all together in a way that magnetizes people. I think that's something it's elusive and it's going to take me decades to really, really become the best at. but it's something that I love and I put into every piece of work I've ever done.
Yeah, so if I heard you correctly, and I think school leaders are very interested on branding, you know, their own local schools, boiling it down, this is very simplified, but it's anticipating needs, I think understanding pain points of folks that you're trying to serve, and then packaging it in a way that say, here's the solution. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, and it's about, you're right, that was great. It's about having a distinct point of view that you want people to feel like, this stands for me, I get it, that's it. You know, when that guy said that thing, that's who I am, and that's what I believe. And you can't be everything to everyone, but when you really create something that has that kind of sticking power, and you see it everywhere in society, it really changes the ability to pull people together and scale something quickly and effectively, because human touch and individuals can only be so big, right? A cult of personality can only be so big. And what you really want is you want something that it's like a constitution, right? It's not it's Donald Trump. It's not just one person. It's it's an idea that everyone supports and defends, and it is bigger than any one person. And those are the most powerful things in the world. You know, the trust in it, the mutual respect for private property and for personal space, the idea of a community looking out for each other and sort of a community watch, things like that. The idea of people helping each other when they're down and having a community that will come together and work with people, friends and family who are going through tough times. Those are ideas and concepts that can exist that are bigger than one person. They can be driven by a person, but you want them to be larger. So
yeah, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Simon Sinek, but you're touching on something, you know, that he's famous for, the starting with the why, and really leveraging the communal power of these deep core beliefs that people are really passionate about. But on the same breath, maybe not everybody shares that perspective, that worldview, and that's okay. So you just have to cater to those folks that really connect with you.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Can we go back to building trust with banks and angel investors? And you said it had to do with trust and capital. I'm wondering what you've learned about that and if there's anything there for school leaders, because we need to build trust with communities because they're trusting us with their children. And I'm curious if there's some hacks, like you said, or tips or tricks that you've learned through that experience that we could translate into the school environment.
Yeah, this is a tough one, and it's something that I'm constantly working at. And it's no secret that when you're younger, people can be a little worried about how you will handle money. I've heard the quote that it takes a lifetime to build a reputation and a couple of minutes to destroy it.
Right.
I think that building relationships, building trust at scale and with the right stakeholders is something that requires a constant moral compass. It requires doing what you say you're going to do, being careful about expectations. It doesn't mean that you always have to win, and it doesn't mean you're always right. It means that there's a certain kind of prudence in the follow through that you, when you set out to do something, you tell people what you're going to do, you put an honest effort towards doing it, and you manage the process in a way that is transparent, and you handle things with a certain level of respect. So they know that, hey, even if it's a risk that we're taking, it's not a for sure thing. I like the way that it was managed, that someone went about, you know, communicating with stakeholders, that we know they gave it their all. We know they really tried hard. We know that they weren't wasteful. And for startups, it means, you know, I don't go out and pay myself a crazy amount when the company needs capital and when we still need to get off the ground. It means that I'm the first one to miss a paycheck, and I'm not buying fancy laptops and TVs and going on a million trips and things like that with someone else's money. If I earn a profit and I want to spend, you know, the money that we went and earned as a business, then I'm going to do that. But with every business, I think that kind of, you know, that the feeling that every dollar means a lot, like it's your own.
Yeah.
The worst thing in the world is when you have stakeholders that are, you know, giving you capital. And in some cases, within communities, people are paying really high property taxes and stuff. And then they feel like the way the money is handled is reckless. That there are people who are getting overcompensated, even when performance isn't really there. that the first person to sacrifice is going to be some low guy on the totem pole and not the leadership,
yep.
that, you know, the money is being wasted on things that don't really make a difference to the, you know, to the customer and the student and the family versus something that might make the administrators or the people feel good. And so we keep an eye on this all the time. You know, I always say the leaders have to put themselves out there on the front lines, and this is the price we pay, you know, dealing with the risk and having to sacrifice to have self-determination, to be able to make choices, to be able to make decisions, and to be able to build a business that involves other people's money. That's a blessing unto itself, right? Imagine if I had to wait 10 years and save up $200,000 of my own cash before I could ever open my first business. There'd be a lot less dynamism in our economy. And so it all starts with trust, and our entire economy is like that. And it really does involve a lot of these little small decisions and how you treat other people's money, how much of a steward you are when they give that to you. It's very important.
I think those are good keys for school leaders to think about and challenge themselves with, because the public, you know, at least for public schools, which I work in, they trust us with their property tax, right? At least in Illinois, how schools are funded. And they're wondering, how is that money being spent too? And it starts with those little decisions. And as a school leader, am I going to go buy myself some nice Bose speakers and a plush throne to sit on and all that type of stuff? Or am I going to dump that towards students, right, who need it most? And if there's cuts that need to be made, am I cutting it somewhere from me, or am I taking it from the bottom? Two other things I really want to highlight to better leaders, and I love these quotes. I think I'll make t-shirts with them. But the idea that you don't always have to win, and you don't always have to be right. And people are really looking at how you respond under stress, under pressure, and are you acting with integrity and credibility to build that trust that Henry is talking about. And I know you keep saying that you're young, but buddy, age is just a number, and I could tell that you have the right material in your heart. So if you're ever sick of the startup world and want to hop into school leadership, I could hook you up.
Thank you. That's very nice of you to say that. I really hope that I can do some amazing things in business so that I'm able to spend, you know, the last half of my career focusing on giving back in some of these other areas that maybe aren't as financially lucrative or as sort of a take more of a long-term view of society. And so believe me, it's something that I do think about sometimes.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, then for sure, we'll have to stay connected. I'd love to help you with that through your journey. So you talked about how Tribe is a different take on organizational tools. Can you dig into that a little bit and tell us how it's different?
Absolutely. So I'll tell you, here's how I'll kind of summarize it. Distinct beliefs that we have and approaches that we've taken that are against the conventional wisdom. And so one of them is this idea that everyone is going to visualize work in the same way. This kind of forcible idea that if you're in a company, they can force you to use certain software and certain tools, even if that particular way of doing things isn't effective or it's not the way you see the world. What we've done is we've created a lot more flexibility. We have people who come into Tribe and say, I can't use this other system because that's built for tech people. I can't use this because it's too complicated. And so we said, well, why don't we build something that can talk with all these different systems? Why can't we start with something that everybody uses? And so we started with email. Right. Tribe works completely over email, and that means you can add tasks and communicate and build accountability and trust with people who at the bare minimum will use email to interface with you. And that's a starting point. 2.5 billion people use email, so there's no one sitting there saying, I don't know how to use this. And then what we do is we build complexity on top of that, only if you want. And so we have things like the ability to interface back and forth between Excel and Tribe. So if you want to build these advanced kind of patterns of work, you know, let's say, here's a great example. You've got a student that's about to start and you've got 25 things that need to happen. Well, the same 25 things happen for every student, and you've got a lot of students that start, you know, throughout the year. And so what if you could build a nice template that was sort of, you know, best practices, it was spread out, and you type in the student's name and the start date, and you could spin up a big process and get all the stakeholders involved, and you could automate that whole process so that it only took you 5 minutes to get going.
Yeah.
That kind of thing we built into Tribe. Well, not everybody.
Sign me up, Henry. Sign me up.
that kind of thing, you know, that's a little intense, right? So not everyone involved in the process has to understand how to put together that template. Just one person, right? The one administrator who really cares and says, God, I have to do this multiple times a year for dozens or hundreds of people. Let's be smart about it and let's kind of save ourselves some time. Well, all the other stakeholders that are involved, all they're doing is just clicking a little button in an email that says, I did that thing. It's pretty awesome to see what happens when you get the casual user involved in kind of sharing data. And then, but also providing powerful tools to add complexity where maybe operations people, administrators, and leaders, they want a greater sense of visibility in what's happening.
I'm really excited now, even more excited to hang out with Oliver to see the potential of this because, you know, I'm guessing you're a Tim Ferriss fan, but you might not be.
Yeah, I love this podcast.
It sounds very similar what you're trying to do in the sense that you're looking at these systems, you're looking at these repetitive tasks that we spend quite a bit of time and then cognitive power on, and how can we build essentially a template up and regulate it to a click of a button and really free ourselves up to do the work that's most important.
Absolutely. Part of that, it sounds kind of crazy, but you know, in 2016, most people don't really affect process. They just do the work and someone else designs the process. In some ways, that's because it was expensive to design a process and it's hard to be nimble. Well, in startups, we've been forced to do this. We've been forced to democratize the idea that everybody is out there studying the best way to do things. And so with Tribe, we want to expose that to the average person. If you're a lower level employee in a business and you see a better way to do something, you can make an adjustment to the process, a very small adjustment, and you can test that method and see if it works better. We think that way of thinking and saying everyone should be involved in contributing at a small level in shaping the best way that things are done. And now, obviously, within the school system, you've got controls. You've got regulatory controls and you've got administrative controls and standardization. I understand that. We've got the same issue with, you know, accountants and lawyers that we serve. Those are problems that can be solved. But within the boundaries of that control is more creativity and freedom than I think people are willing to admit. And it really changes how much people are engaged at work. When you can sit there and say, I've been watching this thing again and again, and I can see what all the steps are, and I know how long it takes. And if we just did this thing a little differently, it could be way better. And then someone says, okay, take that process, modify it, we'll compare it to the old way, and if it works, it works. Then we use the new one. This way of thinking is really common in the technology space, and I think it's just beginning to get a foothold in some other industries. I'm really excited to see what happens when we stop doing things the wrong way. When we start sharing ideas, you know?
Yeah,
you've got
yeah, yeah.
How many school districts in the country? And the ability to say, go online and I'm going to securely share with you this best practices, this way we handled something, and we can stop reinventing the wheel and stop doing things in an inefficient way and borrow from the best ideas that we have. You know, even just within CPS would be pretty powerful.
Oh, it'd be so powerful. You don't even know. And I might have some listeners from CPS, so I'm not going to chime in on the obstacles and barriers, but it can be very frustrating. And one of the things I created on the blog, it has to do with something called response intervention. But for those listeners that are non-educators, for you, Henry, it's basically what do you do with kids when they're struggling, right? How do you make sure that they get out of school what you think they need to get out? How do they engage in a deep way and experience success? Well, the information systems, the student information systems that we have, actually contain different data for some reason. You would think it would all be the same because they're talking about the same kid. And they're cumbersome. They're not agile, like you said, and they don't really even talk to each other. And so under the leadership of some school leaders in CPS, they basically built just a really awesome Excel spreadsheet, and we use it in Google Sheets, but we create a dashboard so we could see all the information that we wanted to see in one place, real time, to help us make data-driven decisions that are best for kids. It didn't exist, and we had to create it.
That's awesome.
It was awesome, but man, it took a long, long time, you know, just trying to figure that out. So we definitely got to learn from other industries, and that's why I'm excited to have you specifically as a guest on Better Leaders, Better Schools. Do you have any insights into how we can start changing our mindsets to approach problems in the way you were just describing.
Yeah. So what I always tell people is this: if we're looking for a customer for Tribe, I always tell my team, I say, it really starts with the following. It starts with the right people, and then the right process, and then the right tools. You don't immediately jump to a tool. What you have to have first is you have to have people who are capable and willing and who get along and agree about a certain kind of mission or problem. And then I think you have to begin to understand and orchestrate behavioral changes. And that process can be very informal. It can be really well documented. But before you even know what kind of tool you need, I think there has to be initial buy-in. One of the things that scares people sometimes about using tools like Tribe is that it requires accountability in a place that maybe that is unfamiliar, that it's a little, it's a little scary. The idea that, wait a sec, my team can see the stuff that I'm doing. They can see that I'm slacking. It's one of those things we think of it like, this is what great teams do.
Yep.
And this is how leaders lead. And this is ultimately more meritocracy. And it's really what the human soul wants is they want to be recognized. People want to be recognized for their hard work. And they want life to be fair, that if you put in more effort, you get more out. Somewhere along the way, a lot of us lost faith in that being true. And so we've decided, you know, it's not really how it works. You just got to be friends with the right people and do as little as you need to not get fired or something. You know, there's a lot of ways to create a new ethic in business. And but I think if you just took a kid and you looked at sort of the canvas of a person, I think that people believe in meritocracy, that they believe in this idea that if you work harder and you do the right things and you're honest and you're accountable and all these other things, that good things will happen to you. And somewhere along the way, we collectively lost faith in some of that, right? So there's a lot of people who don't think that opportunity works that way. And so what we're doing with Tribe is we're pushing a certain cultural change as well. And so if someone's not ready for that, it's going to be tough to adopt a system like this, because you've got to be willing to go out there and say, I'm confident in myself and I'm willing to share information with others because I'm proud of the work I'm doing. And I think, you know, I'm not worried.
And let's pause here for a message from our sponsors. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at betterleadersbetterschools.com/book. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. You know, I'm just like you. I'm a school leader that wants to get better every single day, and that's why I created a free gift for you called The 15 Questions to Unlock Your Leadership Potential. You can grab it today for free by texting the word UNLOCK NOW to 33444. That's UNLOCK NOW to 33444, and The 15 Questions to Unlock Your Leadership Potential will be delivered straight to your inbox. And now back to our show. So I'm going to edit this up. Question out I'm about to ask you, because I need to know your response to frame another question. But
okay.
I'm unclear on if school leaders are listening right now, and I forgot to tell you, so I apologize. This episode's actually going to release in July, okay? July 13th, I want to say. So at that point, will people be able to sign up to test this, you know, in the sense of like, how can I serve you? Like, will I be able to drive customers to you by that time, you think?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you'll be able to do that. Right now, we have a private beta system where you have to get invited to use our full platform. That will be done within a month. We will have the ability to go and sign up on your own. By July, we will have quite a bit more to offer as well. So you're right. Yeah.
Cool. Well, then that'll be my question. So Henry, I love everything that you're saying about Tribe. I know school leaders are fired up. They want to be more efficient, more effective. They want to build more trust and accountability into their school system. Tell us, how do we get our hands on this application?
Yeah. So the best way to get started is to go to tribe.do, tribe.do. And you can check it out. We have a pro version that you can sign up for a trial. And we also have a customer success rep that does training and onboarding for teams. So we're happy to jump on a video call and do a whole setup for you guys as well.
That's incredible. So I know that it's tribe.do, and I want all the better leaders to go check that out, sign up, at least get some more information and see if this application will help you take your school to the next level. Hey, Henry, do you have about 10 more minutes to just talk like leadership and what you've learned from mistakes and that sort of thing?
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. So you're a co-founder of a startup. What have you learned about leading a startup that we can share with school leaders?
Yeah, so I think there are sort of there's no obvious rules for leadership, and a lot of ambiguity is required. You have to be willing to realize that, you know, just sort of general truisms and simple rules are not going to necessarily cut it, that every situation is going to require a careful balance of options. And that's what experience is really going to help you with. Some of the common things I've seen is, and this is just the way that I lead, is leading through example is really important. You know, being, you know, kind of like the first one in, last one out, and making sure that people are inspired by the work that you do, that they don't feel like you're telling them to do the bad stuff and you get to do all the fun stuff. I think there's a certain kind of respect and moral authority you get when you put yourself as a leader out there and say, I'm willing to do the hard stuff, face the difficult decisions, that I'm going to take accountability when things go wrong, but I'm also going to do the stuff that's not fun. And because of that, there's going to always be this credibility when you go to ask someone to do something difficult. They're never going to say, well, you never do anything difficult. You kind of always just pawn this off on other people. Though I think that there's an honor there when you lead by example. So that's a really big one. I think over-communicating is really important, that you have to just err on the side of more, that your instincts about how much people need to know is probably generally too little. And so what I found is keeping all of your stakeholders involved and communicating extremely frequently and with detail is just such a good habit to get into. For me, I've set up a whole set of kind of recurring patterns of things I like to do, whether it be one-on-ones with my direct reports, to emails I send once a week, emails I send once a month, some that I send once a quarter. And it's about really understanding all the stakeholders involved. I want people to feel like they really understand what's going on, that we're not keeping any secrets, that they can go at any point and see what's happening. So over communicate, please make sure that you kind of lean on that side of things. Leading by example has been a big one. You know, I'm not sure if the trying to think of, you know, sort of simple rules that I picked up on. Some of the stuff I've done has been pretty scary, in terms of, you know, getting a business off the ground and some of the times when things were really difficult. And one of the takeaways I've had from that is that there is a role you have to play, and it is sometimes bigger than you and your personality. So here's an example. This is the first time that I've been the CEO. I've usually been the COO. I've usually been the number two for the business. And one of the healthy things that I've recognized is that the CEO is someone who is sort of front and center. They're visible. They're communicating. They're setting the vision. They're doing a lot of different kind of selling and persuading of sorts. And they're sort of the cheerleader for your organization. What you need, though, is you need someone who that person works with and that person trusts to sort of counter some of their tendencies. And so oftentimes the COO will be the person who really handles risk, and they're a little bit more cautious. They're keeping an eye out for some of the downside. So when you have that partner and you have these other people around you who play a different role, it doesn't make them like what the role they play doesn't make them that kind of person. It's just the right role that they should play. That a CEO, even when they have doubt, needs to be strong and needs to be a cheerleader and a champion for the ideas, and that you need other people to balance that force of confidence, that you need people to temper the energy with kind of a calm, cold responsibility as well. And having people who can really balance you out, like Abraham Lincoln called this the team of rivals, that I think is one of the greatest resources that you can have in leadership, is other strong, capable people who balance out each other through their various roles, and yet recognize that they're really playing a role, and that's not everything they are as a person. I'm going to be the quarterback today. I'm going to be the left tackle today. I'm going to be the running back today. And I know what that means to play that role, and I'm going to own it. That's really important.
That's like a master class on leadership. You should consider starting one or getting an adjunct position somewhere. I love that answer so much. And it reminds me of, you know, themes that I hear in really building teams so that each other's strengths really complement each other. And Henry, I'm wondering, do you guys use anything within Tribe? Like, for example, you could get the DISC assessment off of Better Leaders, Better Schools, and you could see what your style is in terms of communicating and behaving and that sort of thing. And using that within a team really helps you understand what other people bring to the table. There's Strength Finders 2.0. You know, there's a whole bunch of stuff out there. How to Fascinate by Sally Hogshead. Do you guys use any tools like that, or is that just being very mindful and aware and present?
Yeah, great question. So I am familiar with some of the tests that you've mentioned. And I've administered a few of those in past companies that I've helped manage. And I like that general approach. I've done the StrengthsFinders test. We've done some other communication styles. I think those things are great. And insofar as your organization can afford them, that they're usually worthwhile. I do think that there has to be a willingness to take it further and dig in and not just take the test, but also really make it your own and implement some. You know, what does that mean? Did we just achieve clarity, or did we actually do something about it? I think there is another level beyond just knowing, where you set people up for success by putting them in the environment that fits the information that you're finding. So we have not done that test. We have a pretty small team right now, but we will, as we build out a leadership team, we will be very cognizant of that leadership styles, communication styles, topical strengths, that sort of thing. So, yeah, I was a psychology undergrad, so definitely value that kind of thing.
Gotcha. What's a book you think every school principal should read right now, and why?
Ooh, that is very interesting. What is it? What's some of the best books that I've read recently? So there's a good book called Nudge that just came out within the last few years that I really like. And I think behavioral psychology in general is pretty critical. There's actually a book. This is an interesting one because it's not what you think of with school. But I think that there.
That's why you're on this show. Yeah.
Yeah. So I will mention it because it's one of my favorites. This is really, really great. I think in the case that you're dealing with a private school or a charter school, or maybe you've got a little bit more space to play with. There's a book called Iconoclast by Gregory Burns, and the subtitle is A Neuroscientist Reveals How to Think Differently. What the book is about is, well, what are the neurological foundations behind iconoclastic thinking, about really sort of changing the game and innovating and being creative. And it talks about leadership. It talks about how you handle fear. It talks about sort of creating environments that are conducive to creativity. I think it's awesome. It's a little startup-y, but I think it's one of my favorites.
No, we need that fresh type of thinking and innovation in schools. So you think the book's awesome. Henry, I think you're awesome. You have given us so much great, valuable information. Just love it. What do you do for fun besides create incredible companies?
Yeah, I still have been able to keep a couple good hobbies. You know, I love work and I love what I do. So I'm putting in a lot of time with that. I'm a long distance runner. I run a lot around the city, participate in, you know, 5Ks and 10Ks when I can. I also like outdoors and mountaineering. So I grew up in the Pacific Northwest. Really, really love hiking, mountain climbing, all that sort of stuff. And yeah, so we go camping a couple times every summer. Love that sort of stuff. So,
I know in the pre-interview I talked about building a school. And I'd like to hear your answer to that, but just to respect your time, I'm going to ask you really, what class would you create if you create a class in any school? You don't know that it exists right now, but you know it would benefit young people to especially equip them for how our world is changing. What would be that class that you would create?
And what is the, this is a great question, what is the age that it would be helpful to sort of think about?
Let me throw that back at you. I mean, I teach high school, so that's sort of my sweet spot. But if you want to answer that for younger people, you can as well.
Okay. Yeah, I think one of the most transformative subjects that I came across in my own sort of self-education that I would be extremely valuable for high school students is being able to understand economics, but not just from a math standpoint, being able to understand it from a social standpoint. I think a class that teaches people, what is it like to be, you know, a laborer in the world? How does capitalism work? How do owners differ from workers? How do you navigate, you know, sort of a free market economy? I think these sort of things are so important and such a leg up to anyone getting out into the world. And even if you're going to go into the public sector, you're going to face this sort of thing. Understanding it with real examples, real stories, real dynamics, and not being sort of intimidated by what some people fall into with the first level of microeconomics is just a lot of statistics and calculus. I think those, you know, math is critical, but really even before that, understanding how to, you know, how price works, how supply chains work, how capital works, how labor works. I think these sort of things really help you understand what's going on in the world. So much of our society is really driven by these forces of value exchange. So,
well, Henry, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, so I'm very active on Twitter. You can find me there, HVasquez. And that's kind of where I like to talk with sort of strangers and the public. And then you can also visit us at tribe.do. In terms of parting words, I think that what you're working on is one of the most important things that we have to think about as our society. It's the flywheel that can really drive change in almost every other part of our lives. Children are a new beginning and a new way to level up society and really push sort of systemic change in a positive way. And so I do believe that many of the great things that we'll do involve the investments we make in young people.
Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Henry. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Henry in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up. You'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the incredible resources Henry shared with us, and the best way to connect. On most mobile phones, you could tap the cover art and the show notes page will magically appear. Henry, thank you for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thank you.
Hey, Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Do you want to be awesome? I know you do. Please leave a 5-star rating and review for us. Click the podcast artwork and long press the show some love link. That'll bring up a page where you can leave a review. This helps the show stay relevant in iTunes and reach a wider audience that wants to become a better leader. If you'd like to connect with me, and I would love to connect with you, there are also links in the show notes. The blog and podcast has an audience in over 100 countries. Connect with me via email, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, or the website betterleadersbetterschools.com.